Hello. Hello, and welcome to There's Hope with Homeopathy. It's August 18th, and this is a live show today. My name is Amy Lansky, and I'm broadcasting from Portola Valley, California, which is right near Stanford University. This is There's Hope with Homeopathy, and it's a show that airs the third Friday of each month that focuses on classical homeopathy and how it can benefit your entire family, and especially how it can be a curative therapy in the treatment of autism. Well, welcome to those of you who are new to the show, and welcome back to those of you who've been following the show for a while. Those of you who've been frequenting my program know that I'm running it basically as a course on homeopathy, and occasionally we have guests and interviews, but usually I'm introducing and teaching most of you to the principles, the basic principles, philosophical principles of homeopathy and homeopathic treatment. One of the ways to benefit the most from this program is to, if you're, especially if you're beginning, is to listen to past archives of the show. You can listen to a good number of them directly from the Autism One website. But if you want to get a full, all of the previous shows, and now it's, I guess there's about a year and a half of them, I recommend going to my book website. And as many of you know too, this show is really based on my book, Impossible Cure, The Promise of Homeopathy. So I encourage all of you who are interested in the content of this show to buy and read Impossible Cure, because it will really, even better than the show, really fully explain homeopathy and how it can help you and your child. So the website is impossiblecure.com, and if you go to the homepage, on the right side, you'll see something like Amy's Show, Archives of Amy's Show. Click on that, and you can listen to all of the past archives of the show, and there's a little description of each one. Also, I want to apologize. I can kind of hear in the background this little buzz. I didn't know that during my show the power company was going to be trimming the trees in front of my house, so if you hear that, that's what's going on there. Sorry about that, but it's pretty faint. Hopefully it won't bother any of you. Let's see. Let's start by talking about some current events. Well, it's the summer. Apologies to those of you who tuned in for July. You got a repeat, although it was a great repeat of the show, repeat of the March show, which was my interview with Erica McPhee, who's another mom who, like me, their child was cured from autism using homeopathy. But anyway, we're back to new shows today. I was gone for six wonderful weeks. My family goes to Canada, where we have a cottage in the area that's north of Toronto in northern Ontario on a lake. And we go there, and it's just an unbelievably wonderful break from the hectic world I normally live in. So, although despite all the world events, trying not to look at the newspapers too much while I was there. Anyway, summer brings its own challenges. Speaking of like the world's events, for example, we're remembering now the horrors of Hurricane Katrina, and also, you know, all the war and everything that's going on in the world. And I thought I'd just, as part of the current events portion this time, mention a couple of important remedies that deal with these kinds of situations. One of them is aconite. And I actually talk about aconite in my book. It's a very important remedy for croup and for the initial stages if you catch a cold right when it's starting. But it's really a keynote aspect of aconite, or it's, if you buy it in the store, it might be called Aconitum napilis, but it starts with A-C-O-N-I-T, is that it is for things that came upon from some initial fear situation or acute fear situation. And for that reason, it's a great remedy when there's some kind of crisis or trauma. It was one of the most, it's one of the most important remedies for people right after 9/11 in war situations. But it's for that initial state of fear. Now, there's many other fear remedies, but aconite is a very important remedy. Also, an important remedy for anxiety disorder, and there's actually a case describing that in my book in Chapter 9, Woman Cured of Anxiety Disorder with Aconite. So the symptoms of aconite to look for are this, you know, symptoms that come on from some fearful situation, sudden initial fear, and also the symptoms come on very suddenly. Especially things like short, dry coughs and sore throats. This remedy is also aggravated from cold, dry winds. The person tends to wake in the night very anxious and fearful. So, and that's, as many of you know as parents, that this is also true of croup. And that's why aconite is also a very good croup remedy. So that's one remedy to keep in mind. Another remedy which it has turned out to be what we call genus epidemicus. Almost everybody needed it. The survivors of Hurricane Katrina is the remedy Ignatia, I-G-N-A-T-I-A. And this is really one of the most important homeopathic remedies for grief and loss. A person who needs Ignatia either is holding in their crying or is just sort of having uncontrollable sobbing. So it's sort of a almost a hysterical-like grief state, and it can be useful even long after the event. Homeopaths who are working in New Orleans have found that even a year later, people are being helped by Ignatia. The person often is also very irritable and tends to somaticize symptoms. So you'll have lots of physical symptoms, but with no real underlying pathology, but very troubling symptoms that are brought on by this grief and loss. And by the way, it's a really great remedy if you experience like a death in your family to take Ignatia. Now, like I said about aconite, there's other important grief remedies, especially people who are suffering from long-standing grief many years later. But these are two very important remedies for these things. Now, if you want to read more about remedies like this, one of the best places to find out about ways you can help yourself in the home is by joining the National Center for Homeopathy. And when you join, in addition to many other benefits, you get a subscription to their wonderful magazine, Homeopathy Today. And it was in Homeopathy Today, the summer issue, that I read really this amazing article about a homeopath in New Orleans who was also, her home was devastated by the flooding, but she managed to get back into practice, and she's found that, for example, like I said, that Ignatia has been a really important remedy for the people of New Orleans that she's treated. She has many wonderful stories. And, you know, Homeopathy Today also has articles that pertain to that, a lot of articles about self-help. In the summer issue, they had articles about treating sun exposure or sun, you know, heat prostration. They always have timely articles. So to find out more about the National Center, just go to nationalcenterforhomeopathy.org. And also, I just put a little plug in that you know, I'm a board member of the National Center, and I've been in charge of a project. We're redoing the entire website, and hopefully the brand new website, which will be completely different look and feel, will be going live sometime in the next 2 months. So anyway, okay, let's move on to today's show. I just wanted to tell you another summer development, which is that it looks like Impossible Cure is going to be translated into its third language, second after English. So there's already a German translation of Impossible Cure, and the Greek translation looks like it's going to be coming out about a year from now. So, let's talk about today's show. Today's show is actually going to be the conclusion of a multi-part series I started, I think, in May, about how the homeopathic remedies work. And in June, I began discussing how homeopaths themselves understand how remedies work. In May and let me see, maybe I started in April, May, in the beginning of June, I talked about scientific studies and scientific ways of looking at how the remedies can be working. But, you know, homeopathy's been around for a couple hundred years, and we have our own understanding of how the remedies are working. And many of those understandings are now being borne out by, research, modern research in, like, ultra-dilution physics and things. So today I'm going to be continuing. I began this discussion in June, but today the whole show is going to be devoted to understanding how you can understand how the remedies are working. And in a way, this is tied into homeopathic philosophy, many of these concepts. So in a way, you'll be learning today a little bit about homeopathic philosophy too, which, by the way, was the focus of my second show back in February 2005. I really recommend people listening to that one. In September, just a little preview, I'm going to be doing an interview show, this time with homeopath Joy Wilson, who has a practice in San Antonio, Texas, and who treats many autistic kids, also a personal friend of mine. And over the coming year, I hope to be doing a bit more interviews than in the past, maybe even every other month. I'm also going to be really going back and talking about philosophy through case studies and touching on other methods of homeopathy besides classical that people tend to use, such as sequential therapy. Also, if you want to email me, unfortunately, in my current setup, I can't get your live emails, but just email me anytime. I will answer your email. People email me from all over the world, and I almost always get back to everybody within a week. Usually faster. So email me for referrals, for questions, whatever. You can email me through the Autism One address, alansky@autismone.org, or at lansky@impossiblecure.com. Okay, so let's continue again. We began last time talking about the first, I'm going to be touching on about four ways of understanding how the homeopathic remedies act upon us. And as I've said often, homeopathic remedies are not operating biochemically like allopathic drugs are. They're not doing some kind of biochemical action on your body. Instead, they're operating on the energy body or the vital force, what Chinese people call qi, Indians call prana, what the homeopaths call vital force. And it's the same thing. It's your energy body. And the first model, and I started talking about this last time and I'm going to continue, is one of the most important ones, and it's viewing it in terms of the property of action and counteraction. Many of us know that maxim: for each action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And as I mentioned last time, our body just operates this way. You know, we can think of sort of the mechanisms of many parts of our body as sort of a pendulum, and if you push it in one direction, it's going to swing back in the other direction. And this is why this property of action and reaction is one reason why the laws of similars works. And people go, well, the fundamental principle of homeopathy is this law of similars. If you are experiencing some symptoms, then you give a substance that can cause those symptoms, that in a way exaggerate those symptoms. So people say, how can that possibly work? But it's because the initial action of the remedy may increase those symptoms a little, but then in reaction or counteraction, your body will react to the stimulus and move your body away from those symptoms. So here's a little experiment that you can do on yourself to see this principle, and it's very handy. Let me tell you, I once gave a talk to my son's fourth grade class and had them do this experiment in the class. And this is having to do with just experimenting with hot and cold water. So let's say you took, you fill your sink with hot water, not enough to burn you, obviously, but very hot water, and you put your hand or your arm into the hot water for as long as you can, like, let's say, you know, 20, 30 seconds, and then you take it out. Well, you will experience afterwards that your arm will feel suddenly very cold. Now, if you do the opposite, you fill the sink with really cold water, and then you put your arm in, and then you take your arm out, after a while, you'll notice that your arm's feeling very warm or hot. It's because your body is reacting against the stimulus and either heating or cooling your body in the opposite direction. Now, in fact, people who work around heat know this. They know that if they get a burn, most of us, if we get run and get a burn, like in the kitchen, we run our hand under cold water to cool it off. But in the end, this actually causes your body to heat the area and will actually aggravate the burn. You're more likely to get a blister and have, a blister from a burn if you run that burn under cold water. However, if instead you put the burn under warm water, not hot enough to just kill you, but warm enough, hot enough so that it is a little difficult to keep your hand under there for as long as you can, like 10, 20 seconds, not for a long time, but just 10, 20 seconds, you will find, I do this now, if I just get a little kitchen burn and I do this, I never get any blister. Half an hour from then, it's like it never happened. And it turns out that people who work in kitchens, like chefs or glass blowers, know this. If they get a burn, they hold their hand close to the heat for a little bit, and it causes the burn to go away. So that's the law of similars in action, and it really works, and it's very convincing. By the way, this also explains the law of similars, this action-counteraction, explains why, for example, something like Ritalin, which is given in toxic doses, but why it works at all. Why would you give speed to a speedy kid? It's because the body reacts in counteraction to the stimulus of the speed and slows down. Although I'm not recommending giving your child Ritalin. I reckon that from a homeopathic point of view, it's like giving toxic doses to everybody, no matter what their symptoms. So it also explains, for example, though, that what is a remedy for vomiting in homeopathy? In fact, this is a very important remedy for the kind of vomiting in pregnancy where you're just nauseous all the time. It's ipecac, made from ipecac. And once again, it's these highly dilute doses of ipecac. It's not like you're drinking ipecac. But ipecac is used to make you vomit. In homeopathy, these ultra-dilute doses are cures for vomiting. It's because the stimulus of this vomiting sort of energy, your body reacts against it and removes the tendency to vomit. It also explains why, for example, the isopathic remedies work. There's a wonderful story in my book, page 241, I wrote it down, about how arsenic is used to detoxify the body of arsenic, homeopathic arsenic. There was actually a scientific study, I think I talked about it probably in the May show, I think it was an Indian study done using homeopathic dose of arsenic to detoxify people who were exposed to arsenic poisoning in the water in India, and it was very successful. This is because your body has been toxified by, let's say in this case, arsenic or metal, and in homeopathic doses you're sort of giving another stimulus of the energy of the substance and your body reacts in counteraction and detoxifies the body of that substance. It also explains why often an important part of homeopathic treatment of autistic children is to give things like the vaccines in homeopathic doses or mercury, because the children have been poisoned by it. But it by no means is this the only methodology. But classical homeopaths do use these kinds of remedies as part of their treatment. But it should be done with caution and not in a routine way. So now I wanted to also mention that this works. This works not just on the physical level, this action-counteraction, but also on the mental level. For example, remedies like I mentioned, like aconite and echinacea, these remedies cause in a healthy person, you know, these substances, in both cases they're made from flowers, cause grief or fear or whatever. But if a person is experiencing those, this small energetic stimulus of something that actually aggravates the initial fear or grief, the body will react in counteraction. So this principle, action counteraction, works on all levels, mental, emotional, physical. One thing I mentioned too is one way of viewing this action counteraction is to think in terms of like the pendulum, like I mentioned before. Imagine that normally your body wants to be like the pendulum at rest, in the middle, not stuck to one way or another. But what if your body was stuck, like kind of off center of the pendulum and just couldn't budge? Well, the way the homeopathic treatment works is that it would be like lifting that pendulum a little in the direction that it's stuck, and then letting go, and then the body would react and swing back towards the center again. But the way almost all conventional or allopathic medicines work is the opposite. They use what we call antipathic medicines. What they do is push in the direction that they want you to go. So if you're stuck to the left, they'll keep pushing the pendulum to the right towards the center. But what will happen then is that the body will often react in counteraction to that, and you'll get even worse. That's why we call this kind of treatment antipathic suppressive. What you're doing is trying to push down or suppress the symptoms. That's why often the body reacts to suppressive treatments by those symptoms becoming even worse. So, for example, why if you take, let's say, Afrin to suppress your stuffy nose, if you do it too much, your nose will become even more stuffy because your body is reacting in counteraction to the antihistamine action of the drug. So that's the first model of how understanding how homeopathic remedies work. Another model I call energetic strengthening through resonance. Now the idea of this is that each of us is in a particular, our vital force is in a particular energetic state or vibration. And you can think of a remedy as also being in an energetic state or vibration. In fact, it's the energetic state or vibration of the substance from which it's made. And when a homeopath selects a remedy for you, what they're really looking for is the substance whose energetic state is the closest or most similar to yours. And they find that out by seeing, you know, in homeopathic drug trials, they give this substance to somebody, to test subjects, usually homeopaths undergoing training, and they see what symptoms this substance causes. These symptoms are indicative of the state of that substance. And those are the symptoms that are recorded in the homeopathic materia medica in the books. And then if a patient walks in with those symptoms, you know that their state or their energetic state is similar to the state of this substance. So in essence, when you get a dose of a remedy, you are essentially getting a little dose of the energy state of that substance. And that substance and that energy state is very similar to yours, as similar as the homeopath can find, the best match. And so what does this do? You're in this vibration, and this substance is in a vibration. Well, in a way, you can think of you and this substance as resonating, just like two violin strings that being bowed at the same note. They're both being played at F. If they're exactly at the same note, they'll resonate with each other and even amplify the sound if they're in tune with each other. In the same way, the remedy that's very similar to your energy resonates with you and essentially amplifies your energy. And you can think of this amplification as a kind of strengthening of your own vital force, which up to that point wasn't strong enough to overcome your disease, whatever it is that's ailing you. And now your body, your energy, which is the fundamental thing that homeopaths believe controls how your body works, your energy body, is strengthened in, through this resonance principle to fight off the disease that you're suffering from. It essentially strengthens your defense mechanism. Now, this, I think I talked about this in the June show, about chaos and complexity theory and about how things work according to chaos theory. And one thing is that I talked about the notion of attractors, and that is that a stimulus, a very small stimulus, if it's exactly correct, if it just does exactly the right thing at the right moment, can cause very big effects. Many of us have heard of this movie called The Butterfly Effect, the idea being that if a butterfly's wings are beating in exactly the right way, at exactly the right moment, it could, like, you know, get amplified and turn into like a hurricane. But it would have to be exactly correct. Well, that's why selecting the remedy that is the best possible match for you can have such a big effect, even though the remedy is a very tiny stimulus. As I've mentioned before, a remedy doesn't even have a single, it's been diluted so much, it doesn't likely have a single molecule of the energetic, of the substance that it was made from. But it has this very small energetic stimulus that was embedded in that remedy. And if that very small stimulus really matches you, it can have a very large effect. In fact, the smaller, the better. It's like that little tipping point. Now, it's interesting, this same principle, you can view it, another example of it might be on the psychological level, in psychological support groups. So if you are, you know, if you're alcoholic and you're going to an AA meeting, there you are with a bunch of other people who are experiencing the same problem as you. And you are in the same state. You are in a similar energetic state as those other people. And that's one of the reasons these support groups of all kinds work, because people who are experiencing the same thing and are in the same state come together, and essentially their energy can resonate better together, and everybody is strengthened thereby. It also explains why, for example, when people come together in your places of worship, or meditators come together, that people who are in the same state or vibration can create larger field effects that are greater than the sum of the parts. I know that there's these experiments that have been done, meditation experiments, where they've gotten, let's say, 1,000 meditators together who meditate in a city for a week. These were experiments done by, you know, TM, Transcendental Meditation people, and they would, like, get, you know, 1,000 meditators to meditate in a major American city. And I guess they were meditating on, you know, creating peace, you know, peace or law and order. And during those weeks when they were meditating, the crime rate of the whole city went down. And that's because this coming together, bringing people in the same state together, creates a sort of resonance or strengthening of a field effect that can have wide-reaching effects. Same way, a remedy that matches you, even though it's a very small stimulus. A third model we might call fooling the vital force, or disease replacement. And this is kind of an interesting one. And Hahnemann, the founder of homeopathy, although at first he was enamored of the first two models, started talking about this third model, or way of understanding how the remedies work. And it is also, we can relate it to the notions of from chaos and complexity theory that I talked about in the June show. So think of disease as being a sort of a negative factor in the complexity theory as an attractor, but some kind of negative force that you have become habituated to. So your body has become so used to, let's say, being in a slightly depressed state that now that's normal for you. Your body isn't noticing it anymore. It's like this negative state of energy that has become so accustomed that your body that can't even rebel against it anymore. It's become your normal state. Same for allergies or whatever, physical or mental. And this disease, you can think of the disease as a sort of a fragment that your body is attracted to that is in this particular vibration. It's a sort of a negative piece of information that your body is habituated to. Now the remedy is a similar vibration, but it is artificial. It is small. It is artificial. When you give this energy to your body, in a way, try to think of it as something that replaces the actual disease energy. It's similar, it isn't the disease, and it kind of fools your body into latching on to this new thing that's very similar, but is different, and it's not the true disease. It sort of fools the body. The body is attracted to this, it assimilates this new piece of information because it's very similar to the disease, but it isn't. And soon, this counterfeit disease fades because it's not really the disease, it's the remedy, and then your body is released from it. Think of it as, let's say, your body has a gap, and the gap in the body wants this disease thing to fill the gap, but we're filling this gap with something else that's an artificial substance, the remedy, and that it fades. And you're no longer enmeshed with it, and you're freed from this disease thing that you've been latching onto. Let's see. Looking at my notes. Let's think of a similar thing here. Imagine that you might use this same thing. Let's say a child is latched on to some food that you know is bad for the child, but you can't get them to let go of it. Those of us who try to remove, let's say, dairy from our children's diets know what we're talking about, okay? So how can you get the kid to stop drinking the dairy, drinking milk? Well, one way is to, as many of us know, is to supply something that's similar to milk, that's sort of a counterfeit milk, and to substitute that, or even do it in very small steps. You know, first you can give the kid half milk and half this other thing, and then you keep increasing the amount of the artificials, the non-milk thing, until the kid's now used to the new thing, but it's not really the substance that they were addicted to. Another way of looking at this is, like, let's say somebody is afraid to, like an animal is afraid of a certain environment, and how you're going to get the animal to come out of that environment. Well, one way might be to create a false environment that's like where they want to be, and then coax fool the animal into this new cage or whatever that looks like what they're used to, and then slowly change it so that now they're removed from this environment and they're freed from where they were stuck. Similar principle, in psychiatry, it's well known that certain mental ailments alternate with specific physical ailments. You might fluctuate between certain kinds of anxiety and certain skin ailments, something like that. And you might have one or the other, not both at the same time. They're essentially reflections of the same state, but in different areas of your being, either in the mental or the physical. Well, think of the remedy as a similar kind of mirror. It is a disease state that can substitute for the disease state you happen to be in, but it isn't really that part of the disease state. So the person will be gripped initially by this very similar disease state, the remedy disease state, but then it will fade and they'll be freed from it. So Hahnemann really came to favor this idea, and a lot of people like it. It also mirrors, or it is buttressed by various things in homeopathic practice and experience. For example, that if somebody is given a remedy that is not a very good match to them, it won't work as well. Or, in fact, let's say you have symptoms A and B, but this remedy has A and B, also C and D. It explains why you may actually get symptoms C and D if you take this remedy, at least for a little while, until the action of the remedy fades. It also explains why for chronic ailments, when people are really stuck, you know, and it's very hard to move them out of their state, it often helps to take what we call LM dosing, or sort of more low and continuous water dosing of the substance, because it's slowly, it's a more gradual thing. It doesn't knock you out of this state. It sort of slowly eases you out of the state, little by little by little, in a more continuous way. And I think in the October show I'm going to do a show on dosing. So I'll talk more about the various kinds of dosing, water versus dry pills, C's versus LMs, explain that further, because I know a lot of you have questions about that. Okay, so let's move on to model 4. And this one, think of the remedy as a piece of information. In a way, it's kind of similar to model 3. Your body is habituated to a state that it doesn't see as pathological anymore, so it's just not reacting to it. It's not removing it. It's kind of like that story, I've been hearing it a lot lately, I don't know why, about a frog. If the frog, you know, if you put a frog in boiling water, it'll jump out. But if you slowly heat the water and the frog gets, you know, very habituated to it, it won't jump out. It'll just be boiled to death. It's like it's the same way with your body. You just have gotten habituated to this disease state. And sometimes you need some information that tells you, you are in a disease state. You are in the boiling water. Time to jump out. So the remedy is kind of like a piece of information, like a mirror that you shine upon you that says, hey, you know, it's telling your energy body, really, this person is in this disease state. Time to react to this. Time to jump out. So you can also think of it as just give intelligence that's given to an army, and that enables the army to finally know where the enemy is and to combat it and win the battle. So this is also this kind of model is buttressed also by the experience that a lot of people have when they take a remedy. You take the remedy and suddenly you're much more aware of what's going on with you, or you're more aware of your own flaws. It can be kind of embarrassing. I've experienced this myself. So you can look at yourself and say, gee, I talk too much, you know. Why am I talking all the time? Or, gee, I'm always overreacting to this. I'm very anxious about this. You know, you can finally really get a sort of an outside perspective. It's like the remedy makes you a better observer of what you're really doing, or what you're really experiencing, so that and it sort of takes you out of it a bit, and that enables you to heal, really. Anybody who has a terrible habit knows that, you know, you're not even aware of what you're doing anymore with these habits. It's not until somebody says to you, do you realize that you're always doing this or that, that you go, oh, and then you start noticing when you're doing these things. That's the first step to breaking a habit, is to actually notice when you're doing things. Well, that's kind of like what the remedy is. It's telling your body, hey, this is what's going on. Because that remedy is sort of a little exaggeration, or it's similar to what you're doing. It's your state, and it's showing you your state, and you so that you can finally become aware and recover from it. Homeopathic teacher that I studied with, a very prominent British homeopath named Jeremy Scher, gave a lecture about this model, and he said, it's like you're on the right road, you're driving on the right road, and you know you're on the right road, but you don't realize you're going in the wrong direction because you're driving and looking in the rearview mirror, something like that. And it's like somebody, especially a high dose of the remedy, you know, it goes, woo, it says, hey, you're driving in the wrong direction. Ah, okay. So if your body has the strength, the car has the gas, you can turn around and start going back in the direction you should be going. Okay, well, those are the four models, but there's one other way of kind of a more spiritual way of looking at disease and looking at the remedy. Thinking of disease as a separation of you from source, from spirit, from God in a way. And think of the remedy as a way of connecting you back up with your source. I don't really think of this as a model of remedy action, but it is similar to an experience that some people have when they take a remedy. And I'm going to just read a quote from the book. It's on page 203. Was somebody describing their experience after getting the correct remedy. This woman said, I have my spirit back, my inner light. Before, when I was hopeless, I couldn't connect with it. I believe whatever this remedy did, I felt before I felt alone and abandoned by God, and the remedy connected me up to the light. I think that the wound that happens to most people is separation from spirit. It's the disconnect, the human condition from the spirit. Homeopathy is a simple way. There's no need for 20 years of psychotherapy. It goes straight through to things. Since I took the remedy, I feel bigger inside. There's an expansiveness to the remedy. That remedy must have some amazing vibration. It's astounding. Nothing will stop homeopathy now. If people have experiences like mine, they'll shout it from the rooftops. Well, I wish that you would all try it and that you would find that this was true. Many people write to me, and they do have this experience, that homeopathy has changed their lives. And if you do have this kind of experience, share with others. Let them know so that other people can benefit too. That's why I wrote my book, and that's why I'm doing this show, so that you can find out about it. So here I've given you these four models, and really they're just eyes on some phenomenon that's going on underneath. We don't really understand, but they're sort of viewpoints of the same phenomenon. In a way, we can put them all together, and that's what I do also in my book. I have a page that tries to synthesize these four models into a way of understanding how the remedies work. So I'm just going to kind of paraphrase from my book here to finish the show today. Disease comes on us when our vital force, when our energy state, gets stuck. And this stuck state is no longer appropriate. It's not a good adaptation to physical and emotional requirements in our life. And usually the reason why this happens is there's some emotional or physical event or many such events, and now our vital force can't adapt, and it's stuck, and it's struggling, and it's blocked, or it's warped in some way. And this, over time, this perturbed energy state has caused perceptible emotional, mental, and physical symptoms. Now, the remedy, by holding a similar vibration to our own disease state, is able to resonate with us and provides exactly the right piece of information so that the vital force can start moving again. Our vital force is everywhere in and around our body, and our body is largely water. If the information touches the body and the vital force, and it's an energy piece of information, it will quickly permeate the body. Now, once the remedy information's been transmitted, a process of normalization of the vital force can begin. And it may occur in small, gradual steps and require a lot of little nudges and reminders through contact with the remedy, or it could happen very quickly, almost instantaneously. And the normalization of the vital force enables it to finally respond as it should, which is in counteraction to the disease and removing the disease state. And this counteraction will cause concomitant healing on the mental, emotional, and physical planes. And of course, your healing with homeopathy is actually the work of your vital force. It's not a chemical thing. It's your vital force reacting finally and repairing itself. And so it might take time for your vital force to direct the physical body and the mind back to health. It might take months, it might take years, depending how stuck and how long you've been in the state. But if your vital force does have enough energy, if it's strong enough to become sound once more, then the healing can take place. And that's because healing is actually self-healing. And that's why treatment with homeopathy often feels very different from conventional allopathic treatment that forces the body into a different state. Because after all, being forced or shoved into a new state feels quite different than entering into it naturally. Ideally, the experience of homeopathic healing is like what the one that quote I just gave, a feeling of discovering your true nature again and a sort of a feeling of great relief and happiness. So that's how I want to conclude the show today. And I just want to remind you all again to check out the impossiblecure.com website. There's all kinds of info there. Another important resource is a Yahoo group and website, homeopathysnc.org, Homeopathy for Special Needs Children. And once again, the National Center for Homeopathy, nationalcenterforhomeopathy.org. So be well. Have a good time this fall getting your kids ready for school and entering back into the school year again. And remember, there really is hope with homeopathy.